Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 105. I am your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud.
What's up, Nemecakes?
Plenty. There is lots to talk about in the world of Nintendo. Gamescom is going on, some Super NES classic pre-orders went up, and then, of course, we've also got game impressions to give and a big topic to discuss. This week, our topic is going to be the 25th anniversary of Street Fighter II hitting the Super NES. That occurred last month. We're a little late, but you know, it's still a fun topic, so we're going to discuss that in just a little bit.
Hadouken!
But first, before we get to that, let's kick things off with some game discussions, specifically with some hands-on impressions of some titles that are now available as demos in the Nintendo eShop, starting with Monster Hunter Stories for the Nintendo 3DS. This is, of course, the new RPG-style take on the Monster Hunter series. It sort of combines that universe and those concepts with a traditional turn-based RPG and with some Pokemon-ish collect-em-all type aspect to create a very different type of Monster Hunter game.
Right.
Pete, have you been playing this, and what do you think so far?
You know, I have. It's good. You're right. You hit the nail on the head. It is a Pokemon version of Monster Hunter. It kind of takes place in the Monster Hunter universe, so there's a lot of items and areas, and kind of the format of the game is kind of similar, except for, as you mentioned, the RPG elements.
Yeah, you're no longer going out and hunting monsters in real time. You're doing it in turn-based battles. And almost as importantly, you are a monster rider. So you have a monster companion that you actually take into battle with you and then ride around as a steed in the overworld.
Right, or your cat rides it.
Yes, your feline companion,
right.
Naviru, I think is his name. He will ride around on your monster. So, yes, you have a cat riding a dinosaur, basically. So in that regard, this could be considered the best game of all time.
Chris, will you ever be my feline companion?
Only if you pay me a whole lot of money. Anyway, this game is extremely ambitious. I'm almost surprised to see this game running on the 3DS, because it seems like it should maybe possibly be on more powerful hardware. It's got a huge world, it's very colorful, tons of detail, just crazy production values,
but
it's almost overwhelming for the poor 3DS hardware. There's some draw-in and some pop-up, and it does have full stereoscopic 3D, but it's actually, you know, not very impressive. It didn't really enhance the visuals like it does in a lot of games. I kind of would turn it off and it looked just as good as it did with the 3D.
I almost like didn't think it had 3D because I was adjusting it and then I'm like, oh yeah, I guess there is some 3D, but it's really minor.
It's definitely there, but it's just not as impressive as it is in some other games. But that's kind of just being nitpicky because most of what's here, I think, is really, really good. It's got a very fun turn-based battle system with this rock, paper, scissors element where you choose between power, speed, and technique attacks.
Yep.
And that's really fun and cool. And there's also the ability to jump on your monster's back in battle and then use these super attacks against the adversaries.
Right. Yeah, I saw that. Pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so far, you can only have yourself in battle along with one other monster. You can have other monsters with you. You can rotate them in.
Right.
But I'm wondering if your party ever gets bigger than just two characters. Plus, you can't really control what your monster is doing. You can only control what you're doing, and your monster kind of does its own thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like me and you.
But still, it works pretty well. I didn't have, too much trouble with my monster, like, completely being an idiot or something. Sometimes he doesn't do exactly what you want, but it's still is pretty darn effective.
Right.
However, I think it would be more fun if you could control more than just one character in battle at a given time. Also, even though this game does borrow a lot from Pokemon, you aren't running around just trying to collect every monster you see. The collection aspect is somewhat minor compared to Pokemon. You have to go into these monster dens, make your way to the end of the den, steal the egg, and then hope that the egg will hatch into something cool.
Right.
This demo, though, it's just really, really massive. I have put in about 7 hours already.
Wow.
And I don't think I've seen everything it has to offer.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not nearly that far into it, but I've played enough to get a good taste of what it's about.
Yeah, there's plenty there. And that 7 hours isn't just doing the mandatory quests. It's doing a lot of side quests. It's doing a lot of exploring. It's doing a lot of fighting just to level up. But, you know, just doing the bare minimum, you know, there's a ton to do. First, you become a monster rider, and then you have to, like, go on a quest and get an egg.
Right.
And I think then after that, you learn to fight other riders, and then you have to chase down your friend and then investigate some disturbance in a cave. And, you know, early on, you see some monster that comes through and smashes up your village, and it's, you know, possessed by some evil called the Black Blight, I believe. And so then at the end of the demo, you hear that, you know, something involving that is going on. You have to go and, you know, look into that. And then after that, that is when the demo ends. But alongside that, there's hunting down these extra eggs,
right,
and slaying extra monsters as side quests, gathering up various odds and ends to give to other villagers. And you can just spend a ton of time doing this. There's even a fishing mini game going on in there.
I didn't get to that, but this sounds amazing.
I mean, as far as demos goes, it's really, really extensive. And it gives you a really good idea of what's going to be in the real game when it launches on September 8th.
Yeah, coming up soon.
Yeah. So after playing this, do you think you're going to get the full game?
Ooh, it's a good question. You know, honestly, aside from Metroid 2, I gotta say that I'm kind of done with my 3DS, as sad as it is to say that. But
oh, man.
Yeah.
That's crazy talk.
I know. It's just, you know, now that I'm on the Switch, it's so hard to go back.
Well, I see what you're saying, but there's still a lot of good stuff on the 3DS, and I'm probably going to pick this up. You know, I really want to know what happens next. And another thing that's not in this demo is amiibo functionality. And, of course, I have the Japanese amiibo that came out for the game. I want to be able to try those out and see what that is all about.
I can literally imagine your mustache just, like, wiggling in happiness about the amiibo functionality that's coming with this game.
I'm glad that's something that inspires your imagination.
I have a question for you, Chris.
Uh-huh.
I know that with previous Monster Hunter games, you've kind of hated the format. You're not a huge fan of the typical Monster Hunter game. Does this feel like it broke enough from the format that you're happy with it?
Well, I certainly wouldn't say I hated the previous Monster Hunter games. There's a lot that I really liked about them.
Sure.
But when it came down to the actual monster hunting, the actual combat, you know, I never felt like I really got it, because even when I had quick weapons, it felt very sluggish. And, you know, I'd be like, you know, swinging at a monster, and the monster just going around doing its own thing. And like, by the time I execute my swing, the monster is like halfway across the arena,
right,
or something.
Right.
And I just felt like I never got into a great flow of combat. You know, sometimes I would get maybe a faster weapon, but then it would seem so weak. And then, of course, you know, the best way to play is to go online with other players. It was always very hard for me to organize something like,
right,
that, to actually, you know, enjoy the game the way it was meant to be enjoyed. So, yes, this thing totally changes things up, turns it into a more traditional RPG that you can easily play as a single-player game,
yep,
and I think it works really well. You know, it hits all the right buttons. It works very well for me and the kind of gamer that I am. So, you know, that's what my initial impression was when I first saw the screenshots of the game,
yep,
you know, months and months ago, and now that I've got to sit down and play it for nearly 7 hours, yes, it seems that that's exactly what the game is.
Yeah, that's cool.
Also, another thing I would like to say about this game is that you get to spend a lot of time foraging. As I was sort of hinting at, you can get a lot of precious stones and, you know, like monster parts and herbs and things like that you find on the ground. And unlike some other games, you actually do not have to get off of your mount. You can stay on the monster's back and still collect all of this stuff. So take that, Link.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Yeah, seriously. You can't even shield surf and pick up stuff. What's up with that?
Well, in this game, you can't shield surf at all. So I should also mention that the different monsters have different abilities. I've only used that monster that you start with, the Velocidrome. Mm-hmm. And he's got a jumping ability, so you can stand on certain, you know, jump areas and leap up to higher ground.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like it's going to be really cool in the full game, where you can have all these different monsters and use all these different abilities. Have you used anyone aside from the Velocidrome, or have you just kind of stuck to that one?
No, that's the only one I've stuck to.
Okay, well, for me at least, that certainly gives me something to do when and if I pick up the full game. I'm not 100% saying I'm going to get it, but I'm like, you know, 90% saying I'm going to get it, because
yeah,
it really does hit all the right buttons for me. And you know, even if it's a little rough around the edges, Yeah, I gotta say, I'm really impressed with those production values,
yeah.
Even if the 3DS can't quite contain it all.
And I really like that it kind of, you know, is a good gateway drug into the Monster Hunter universe. It's kind of that, like, reminds me of even the Fire Emblem game on smartphones. You know, it's enough of the Fire Emblem universe that you kind of get a feel for it. If you weren't already into the Fire Emblem universe and series, this is kind of the same. You get, like, a lot of the same items and music and sound effects, and it's just kind of a fun little side quest to the main series.
Yeah, it's a great way to get into it if you don't appreciate necessarily everything that's in those full Monster Hunter games.
Yeah. Oh, the other cool thing about the demo is that if you play the demo, your save file looks like it carries over to when you buy the game. So
yeah, that's what they're saying.
Yeah, so you won't lose your 10 hours or whatever you invest into the demo. Like
Chris. Yeah, it's only 7 so far, but yes. That's going to be pretty convenient.
I said 10 because I know you're not done yet.
I'm not done yet. I think I still have maybe just one more side quest I haven't quite completed yet. But, maybe there's more I haven't discovered. Maybe I'm just going to explore the territory. Maybe I'm going to find more kitty cats to ferry me around to different parts of the overworld. Because, yes, that's something the felines do. They will provide you quick travel. So, yeah, there's just lots to do, lots to discover. And it seems to be a pretty impressive game. So, yeah, I'm certainly looking forward to the full game coming out in just a few weeks.
Yeah, I can't help but kind of wish that it was coming out for Switch. They were doing like a, slightly higher res version. But you know what? I'll settle with the 3DS version.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying is that, it almost seems too much for that system. And if it had been on Switch, I think all those problems would have been alleviated. But, I can't complain too much. It still seems like a pretty nifty game.
Yep. Agreed.
But speaking of Switch and speaking of playable demos, another one I have been playing is Rayman Legends Definitive Edition. Have you had a chance to try this one out on Switch?
No, and we can talk about that later.
Well, it is, of course, mostly a port of the game that's already been out on other systems. It came out on the Wii U a few years ago, and it is just, a very, very pretty, gorgeous, beautiful, amazing-looking 2D action platformer. Fairly traditional and silly platforming where you run and jump and attack and collect stuff. And, if you haven't played it on Wii U, you should probably give this a try if you like platforms. It's very, very impressive.
I have played the Wii U version, and it is a great game.
Yeah, I only played a little bit of it, and I kind of forgot how good it was. So it was nice to be able to go back and check this out again and be like, oh yeah, this game was really pretty darn amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There are 5 stages in this demo. There are 2 that are just, pretty traditional platforming stages. In addition to that, there's also a stage called Castle Rock, which is a rhythm stage. And it still has the normal, platform mechanics, but you're running and jumping and attacking. Everything you do is synced to the beat. There's this huge wall of fire coming after you. And the way that's implemented is really, really cool. It's some of the best rhythm action I have ever seen in a non-dedicated rhythm game. In addition to that, there's a stage called Murphy's Touch, which is a completely touch-driven mode. It's only available when the Switch is not docked, because the main character is running around, he's just CPU controlled, or she's just CPU controlled, and you use the touch screen to move obstacles out of this character's way. So you're moving platforms and chopping down obstacles and shooting enemies with a slingshot. And then the 5th stage that's in there is called Kung Foot, which is a soccer/beat-em-up. So Pete, if you love Mega Man Soccer, you will probably love Kung Foot.
I do, and I mainly love it because you hate it.
I don't hate it. It's got Mega Man. How can I hate it?
I mean, I don't know.
Kung Foot does not have Mega Man. It only has Rayman and friends, but I also love beat-em-ups, so it is a pretty neat mode.
I would say you hate it as much as you can hate anything with Mega Man in it.
I think you are mistaken, but
fair.
Yeah, I think it's pretty darn fun. Everyone should check it out.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go check it out after this, and partially because you told me how to find it.
Yeah, I guess the tricky part is that if you go onto the eShop and you do a search for the word Rayman, it will not show up. At least it didn't for me. So what you have to do is just go to the upcoming games that are coming soon, find it there, go into that game, and then you can download the demo from there. But yeah, if you just do a search for some reason, it wasn't coming up. So that is pretty strange, but there is a workaround.
Yeah, I didn't even do a search. I just looked at, the latest releases, and it wasn't there. And
well, I guess because the real game isn't out yet. Right. I don't blame it for not being under new releases. But yeah, I thought it was very strange that searching didn't make the game come up.
Yeah, more than anything, I just have to say this is a good opportunity to say, please, Nintendo, please update your eShop. Just with a few more options and a few more little bells and whistles. Like, I wouldn't mind a couple more updates.
Yeah, that would be very nice.
Yeah.
However, that aside, this is a really impressive looking demo. The full game hits on September 12th, and it's only going to be $40. So you're not going to have to pony up a full price for a game that you might have already played on Wii U not that long ago.
That's good.
I mean, the biggest thing against this game is that Sonic Mania just arrived to scratch that platforming itch, and Mario is not that far off.
Yeah.
However, if you are a platforming fan, you absolutely owe it to yourself to at least check it out and see if you want to add this one to your library.
Mm-hmm.
Moving along then to some news. Of course, we have Gamescom going on right now over in Europe, and Nintendo has made a whole bunch of announcements and updates to go along with this event.
Yeah. I got to say, they're treating Gamescom this year almost like it's E3.
Well, I don't know if I would go that far, but there certainly have been a lot of interesting updates for a lot of existing products.
Yeah, let's just say I'm not mad. It's cool that there's so much cool support for all these things coming out. It's fun. Mm-hmm. It's a good look for Nintendo.
Yeah, and one of the most interesting things is the update they gave about the Super NES Classic.
Mm-hmm.
We found out that there is a rewind feature in there, so you will actually be able to rewind your gameplay if you don't like the way things are going. What do you think about the inclusion of this feature on this device?
Yeah, it's super random, I guess. It was not expected. But at the same time, it's a welcome addition. I mean, there's some games like Punch-Out, or Super Punch-Out, as it were, that would make this, amazing. And then I've read that in some RPGs, you can go back like maybe a matter of minutes, rewind. So that's kind of cool, too, because you could always like try something or... You know, there might be an opportunity to do something differently this time around. I think it's kind of the perfect feature to have on something like this.
Yeah, it certainly isn't the first retro collection to do something like this. I was playing the Capcom Disney collection on the PlayStation 4 not long ago, and they have a rewind feature in that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a first for any of Nintendo's retro releases. And yeah, like you were saying, it varies how long you can rewind depending on the game. So, some action games, it's only like, 40 seconds. But as you were saying, with RPGs, it's going to be several minutes. So, yeah, that's pretty convenient. I mean, it might have been nice just if you could rewind a few minutes for everything. But, this should still work pretty darn well.
You mean everything, like even in real life?
That's not quite what I meant, but sure, that would be handy too.
Like that time that I deleted all your Final Fantasy VI save file?
You had to bring that up, didn't you?
Yeah. So, did you manage to get a Super Nintendo Classic? I know a Super NES Classic. I know that they kind of came out over the weekend.
Yes, that's right. Pre-orders have also gone up for this thing, but they did not last long. However, yes, I did get one. Yeah, they went up around 10 p.m. Pacific time on Monday, and I just happened to be checking Best Buy's website right at that time. And so I feel like I was one of the first people to notice that they went up. And it took me a few tries. I was kind of reluctant to do it. Like, it was claiming that it couldn't deliver it, and that was claiming it couldn't do in-store pickup. But I tried a few times. It went through. I was able to complete my order. And then after that, of course, I jumped on Twitter to let everybody know that it actually had functioning pre-orders up there. And so hopefully a lot of our listeners saw that and were able to get pre-orders in as well.
Yeah, and it's such a strange thing because it's just like, if you were asleep, like a lot of people probably were, they just didn't get a shot to pre-order.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't so bad out here going at 10 p.m., but that's, 1 in the morning over on the East Coast.
On like a Sunday night or a Monday night.
I was on Monday, so it was on a work day for sure. But yeah, pre-orders were up for about 30 minutes from when I first noticed. And that's a far cry from what happened the next day. The next day, the pre-orders went up on a bunch of other sites, like Walmart and Target. And I guess it went up on Amazon overnight, although it seems like that was kind of a goof of some sort, but they're still honoring those pre-orders. But anyway, the Walmart and Target ones went up around 10 a.m. the next morning, and they were gone in record time, like 30 seconds. Yeah. I mean, I was there right at 10 a.m. also for when they went up on Walmart. You know, I was already logged in. I clicked for it because I was trying to pick one up for a friend of mine, and it was gone, you know, by the time I got through the checkout.
Yeah, I think they were ready for it. They knew that it happened the night before, so there was probably some hackers ready with their bots, you know, just to load as many into their cart as possible.
But it was ridiculous. Yeah. Most of the retailers, I think, had limits. You could only get one or two.
Right.
But for these things to sell out on these websites in like 60 seconds or less is just completely insane.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
So I know a lot of people are complaining, oh man, Nintendo, you're ruining it again. You're totally blowing it just like last time. Mm-hmm. And yes, certainly, this does not give me great faith that they are going to be able to meet demand. On the other hand, you know, to play the other side of the coin, at least they did make pre-orders available, unlike last time. So, you know, I guess you can be like, well, at least they're learning something. At least they've got these baby steps.
I mean, you have to think that this can't be the only shipment, but we'll see. I mean,
oh, yeah. I mean, there's definitely going to be more. Nintendo Still Switch is going to be way more of these than there were NES Classics.
Right.
So it's a little early to start shaking our fists and saying that Nintendo totally blew it. But, you know, I just wish they would say, like, okay, we see how heavy demand is. We're not going to make this a limited edition product that's only going to be available for, you know, a handful of months. Because I think that is what really gets the scalpers salivating and excited and trying to steal up every single one of these. Because, you know, if they promise, yeah, we're just going to keep making them until people aren't interested anymore, you know, that seems like it would be the best for everybody involved.
Yep.
The consumers get their systems, Nintendo gets plenty of money, and everyone goes home happy. But yeah, I can see why people are frustrated.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's nuts. Anyway, back to other Nintendo news that was coming out of Gamescom. There was some update about Splatoon. We know that the Manta Maria is coming as a new multiplayer stage, and the Lost Outpost is coming to Salmon Run.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Bubble Blower and Forge Splattershot will be available starting September 1st. As a Splatoon fan, are you excited about any of this stuff coming to Splatoon 2?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think Salmon Run definitely could use an extra level. I think that, you know, anytime there's new multiplayer levels, that's exciting. And then weapons, of course. I mean, anything free, I'll gladly check it out.
Yeah, for sure. The Manta Maria looks really cool to me.
It does.
It's like a really nifty looking stage.
Yeah, it's like the boat, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Pretty cool looking level.
Yeah, boats are always neat. And then over in ARMS, they have revealed a new character. It is Lola Pop, a sexy clown with poofy polka dot pants who can inflate her body like a balloon for increased defense. Pete, what do you think of this character? Because my opinion is, it's completely insane.
I mean, the character absolutely is completely insane. I was hoping it would be...
It's ridiculous.
If you're going to make a guy that inflates, you might as well do the Big Trouble from Little China guy. but since they didn't go that route, I think that it actually is a kind of a cool mechanic from some of the videos that I've seen. Like, I'm interested to see how that works and what kind of dynamic that adds to the game.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, it's definitely one of the weirdest characters I can remember in a fighting game.
Yeah, clowns, you know, they're always pretty creepy and terrifying. So to come up with this new sexy clown is just really bizarre to me.
I thought you were into that.
I wonder if there's any relation to the clown in Super Punch-Out. Mm. Guess we'll have to wait and see.
I wonder if the insane clown posse knows about it.
Sorry, you'll have to check with your Juggalo friends about that.
Your Juggalo friend.
Speaking of Splatoon, though, Nintendo has also announced that the Splatoon 2-themed Switch system is going to be coming out in North America as a Walmart exclusive. It includes, you know, the Splatoon colored Joy-Cons, a green left one and a pink right one, along with a carrying case and a digital copy of Splatoon 2. It'll be available on September 8th for $380. Pete, do you like the system? Are you kind of jealous of this? Are you wishing you'd maybe held out and gotten this instead of the regular off-the-shelf Switch?
You know, it reminds me of Bubble Yum for some reason. Like, it just tastes like watermelon when I just look at it.
Well, this is very neon.
But, no, I mean, I'm okay that I didn't wait because, honestly, you know, it's just a new two-color Joy-Cons, right?
And yeah, that's pretty much all it is.
Yeah, so, you know, I like it, but I can live with that.
Yeah, I mean, if the system, if the unit itself has some sort of Splatoon deco on it, then you know, maybe then I could see people getting you know, really excited about it. But you know, if it's just the Joy-Cons, I can be okay with not having that. And they kind of imply that those are just going to be the way that they're initially available. They might also be selling these neon green and pink Joy-Cons separately. They didn't say for sure in the press release, but that's kind of what it sounded like.
Right.
However, it is a nifty opportunity to get all that stuff in one package if you're a Splatoon fan who has been holding out on picking up a Switch. I will say that the price is not particularly impressive, though. I mean, if you buy the Switch and you buy the game separately, that's $360. But, you know, this is $380, so I guess you're, you know, really paying an extra $20 just for that carrying case. It'd be kind of nice if they threw something in and made it kind of a bargain, but,
yeah,
you know, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is the best way for somebody to find a Switch in the store.
Maybe it is. Maybe it is. I suppose just having more Switches out there in any capacity is definitely a good thing.
Yeah.
Moving on to our next topic. Another thing for players to look forward to is the DLC coming to Shantae Half Genie Hero. That is the new mode where you can play as the nefarious pirate Risky Boots in Pirate Queen's Quest. This comes out next week on August 29th, but if you were a Kickstarter supporter, it is already available right now.
What?
Yeah, so I got a hold of it earlier today, and I have played through a good chunk of this new mode.
Nice. What do you think?
Well, I played it back at E3, so I knew it was going to be really, really fun. But actually being able to play it in, you know, its natural environment, so to speak, and start from the beginning and seeing how you actually progress, it puts it in a whole new light. And it is really fun, of course. The thing that stands out to me is how non-linear it is, because you can go to any of the levels in any order, and then after you beat them, you acquire a new ability. So it's a little bit like Mega Man.
Hmm.
You don't use these abilities against the bosses or anything, but they certainly help out when it comes to exploration.
No wonder you like this game.
Well, WayForward does great stuff.
They do.
And the other thing that's really neat about it is that instead of just going to a shop to buy your upgrades, you upgrade all of Risky's abilities and weapons by finding these hidden pieces of dark magic in a treasure chest. So you use these to, for example, make your pirate hat let you glide further, or to do more damage with your weapon, or to increase your health bar.
Hmm.
And by powering up these different abilities, that lets you explore more of different levels. So, of course, you're encouraged to go back to different levels to find more stuff, to level up your abilities, and that lets you go back to explore even more stuff. And, of course, you know, that same sort of concept was in the regular Shantae game, but the way it's done in this DLC mode, I think, works really, really well and adds a fun new twist to the gameplay. And, of course, it's just cool to be able to play as Risky and, you know, see things from her perspective and command the Tinker Bats to attack enemies for you. So, really, the gameplay isn't a whole lot different from regular Shantae, but it's different enough, and it's still really, really polished, just like the regular Shantae game is. So, you know, it's a whole lot of fun.
Cool. Did you mention a price?
No, I didn't, because for me, it was free as a backer. When the actual thing releases next week, if you were not a backer, you'll have to pay for it, but I'm not sure what that amount is going to be. My guess would be probably $15, maybe $10, something around that. Of course, there's still no release date yet for the physical Switch version of Shantae Half Genie Hero, but when that comes out, it's going to include both the Shantae game and the Risky mode. So that's all going to be included there if you hold out for that.
Cool.
Whenever it hits. Mm-hmm. Speaking of you know, really cool third-party downloadable stuff, did you see the news about Rocket League on Switch?
I did.
Yeah. That is pretty cool, huh?
It actually is. You know, at the end of the day, it really doesn't mean anything, but the fact that they're doing it is pretty cool, I think. It's just like one more icing on the cake if you were thinking about buying the game.
So let's not beat around the bush here. For those who aren't aware, the news is that there are going to be exclusive Nintendo-themed vehicle skins for this game. There's going to be a Mario car, a Luigi car, and then two Metroid car skins. There's going to be one like Samus's gunship, and then another modeled after the Varia suit, although we haven't seen that one.
No.
There are also going to be ways to modify your vehicles in other Nintendo-ish ways, such as making the speed trail behind the Samus ship be look like the wave beam.
Right.
And on the Mario vehicles, it'll look like you know, an invincibility star trailing behind you.
Right.
So as a Rocket League fan and Nintendo fan, how does this make you feel, Pete?
It's very cool, but it's also very superfluous. It's definitely a nice to have. It's not something you absolutely need, of course, but it is a cool little nod and something that's exclusive to Nintendo, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, I think for people who are on the fence about getting this on the Switch, I think this is likely to push them over the edge. I mean, you were probably going to get it on Switch already, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, there was no chance I wasn't going to buy this.
There's still no release date for the game. It's going to be coming out sometime during holiday 2017, they say. But yeah, this is definitely another awesome reason to look forward to this hit game.
Yeah, even if it was probably $5, I probably would have ponied up for it.
That's right. It doesn't cost anything. It's absolutely free for people who get this game on Switch.
Which is pretty cool. I also wonder, though, when you play, you know, there is some cross-platform compatibility. I wonder when you play on Xbox, are they going to see Mario and Luigi cars?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I was kind of wondering that myself. I assume they would, but who knows? I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Maybe they'll just be green and red.
All right. That does it for the news this week. Let's switch over to some listener mail.
Letter. We got letters. We got letters all the time.
Wow. I guess I didn't need to add that new jingle. You've got a theme song for us. All right. This first one comes from listener Becky R. She writes, "Hello, Chris and Pete Podcast Rangers." Ooh, I like that. Wow. That's a good name for us.
Is that like Chip and Dale?
Exactly. Only we don't dance. Like, yeah, I'm not going to get into that. Anyway, she continues, "My holy grail is a third party one, and I'm sure Chris would agree. Ace Attorney Investigations 2. I watched a playthrough of the fan translation on YouTube and found it to be quite compelling, especially since it touches on Miles Edgeworth's backstory. Also, on the subject of system redesigns, I can't believe no one has mentioned the clear plastic Game Boy that came out in the late 90s when they were recoloring the old gray toaster. My friend had one, and I was so jealous of her." So to respond to this, yes, I think that Ace Attorney Investigations 2 is absolutely on my list of lost Holy Grail games I would love to see come to North America. I'm a huge fan of that series, and I'm secretly holding out hope that we will get it one day. Because, Capcom loves to bring back their older games in new ways. Like, we're getting the 3D enhanced version of Ace Attorney 4. Mm-hmm. So, maybe they'll decide, we're going to do 3D enhanced versions or Switch versions of the Ace Attorney Investigations games. And, when this came out on DS, they didn't really have digital distribution. So maybe then this new version will hit and they'll be like, okay, this time we're going to put it out because we can distribute it digitally and we can localize it and put it out there for people to have to worry about selling it at retail. And I mean, that's how we got the Ace Attorney series to begin with. It was on Game Boy Advance. We never got that here. But then when they poured it to DS, they decided, okay, now it's worth doing. So I'm kind of hoping that Ace Attorney Investigations 2 somehow, some way arrives in that same type of manner. So cross my fingers for that. But yes, that is an excellent choice, Becky. As for that Game Boy system, we weren't really talking about, just system, color revisions. That wasn't really a hardware update, but that was a pretty cool system. Do you remember that one?
I do. It's funny. I didn't until I just heard that letter, but definitely remember it. It was pretty cool at the time.
Yeah, I think it was among the first batch of recolored Game Boys. I think they did a red, a yellow, a green, a black, and then a clear, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that.
No, I think you're right.
But yeah, it was certainly a cool-looking system. Definitely nifty. Definitely a neat one to have. And a great collector's piece if you're into that sort of thing. The next letter comes from Brian Booth. He writes, "I enjoy the episode on Nintendo's Holy Grail games. I'm personally still holding out hope for some kind of RPG or at least story-based crossover game a la Smash Brothers, but more connected to each game's lore than Subspace Emissary ever tried to be. I realize it might be difficult to bring together all those disparate elements, but some things like Star Fox, Metroid, F-Zero, and Zelda Fire Emblem Kid Icarus would make a lot of sense. And in a world where Kingdom Hearts exists, why shouldn't Nintendo be able to bring together all their different franchises in one sweeping, epic, awesome game? Probably never going to happen, but it would be great. I actually have a couple of questions after your last episode. You mentioned the idea of a Zelda Maker game, and it reminded me of a YouTube video I saw recently of a fan-made Mega Man Maker game that looked pretty impressive. It made me wonder if there are any other franchises you think would work well in a Mario Maker-style game. Finally, your discussion about Terranigma and the existence of a legitimate English version sparked my interest, and I put it on my mental list of games to watch on YouTube in the future. I think I can guess Hoff's answer to this, but what do you guys think about the phenomenon of spectator gaming?" Okay, so to respond to this...
A lot of good questions there.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think about a all-encompassing crossover Nintendo RPG like he was talking about? I think it'd be pretty awesome.
I mean, it definitely makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is curious that Nintendo doesn't do more of that. You know, Smash Brothers kind of is truly the one that really spans everything.
Mm-hmm.
Mario Kart has started to dabble into that.
Right.
This last Mario Kart obviously had way more characters than I ever thought what I would see in a Mario Kart universe. I would say that if there was ever a chance for this kind of thing to happen, it's probably likely now, but who knows?
Yeah, it would be really neat if they did something like that. And, you know, in a way, Miitopia almost does something like that because you can get all these different costumes for your Miis.
Right.
So it's not the real Mario and Link teaming up in RPG, but you can make a pretty close approximation.
Yeah.
But yes, I actually considered putting this on my list of Holy Grail games as something I would love to see happen. And even, you know, I was thinking what would be really great, and I know I mentioned this on the show before, is like an exclusive version of Kingdom Hearts
right.
on Nintendo systems that has like a Mushroom Kingdom world and, you know, Hyrule in there as well, and they could just combine all that stuff. That'd be, you know, pretty amazing,
yeah.
in my opinion.
It actually seems like Square Enix is sort of rekindling the old flame with Nintendo, so, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll do something like that.
Yep, it would certainly be cool. As for his next question about some other, you know, maker-style game on Nintendo systems, is there anything that you think would be a good fit?
I mean, the truth is, almost any of Nintendo's old-school franchises would make good maker games, potentially. A Kid Icarus Maker or a Metroid Maker. Those aren't, obviously, they don't lend themselves super well the way a Mario does or maybe potentially a Zelda does. But I think that there is possibility with any of the, especially 8-bit franchises that Nintendo has. What about you?
For me, I would actually not pick anything 8-bit. I would go with Mario Kart.
Huh?
I think being able to create your own Mario Kart tracks would be pretty darn amazing. It'd be a great way to extend the life of a game like that that already has so much content. But, you know, I could see you being able to pick the theme for your track and then just go absolutely wild with the track design, especially now that they're allowing like anti-gravity and stuff. So, you know, I could see corkscrews and loops and all sorts of crazy track designs coming out of something like that. I mean, I know that's like the hardest part of making a Mario Kart game is coming up with a compelling track design.
Right.
So I think the developers could be like, hey, you know what would be great? Let's get the entire community just to make all the levels for us.
Yeah.
And then they could turn it into something super awesome. So I see that as being, you know, not an old school throwback, but an absolutely modern, fully 3D, you know, Mario Kart Maker based on, you know, just all the latest technology that we've seen in Mario Kart. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, I agree. And if we are going racing, I would actually say F-Zero would make perfect sense for this too. They've already done a track editor for it once.
Mm-hmm.
It never came out here.
That's right.
Switch would be perfect for it, especially with, you know, all the online features and being able to, you know, share your tracks and all that would be great.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. Okay, and so on to the last part. What do we think about spectator gaming? For me personally, I think that, you know, having all this stuff out there is a great, fantastic tool. It can be super informative. It can tell you a lot about games. It can teach you all sorts of little details that you'd otherwise never know without playing the games for hours and hours. But as far as just, you know, watching it for fun, that's totally not something that I would be into. I would always rather be playing a game than watching a game. So unless I'm trying to, you know, just watch it for informational purposes, you know, decide if I want to buy it or something like that, it's just totally not for me. Pete, what about you?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. But it's funny because if somebody would have told me 10 years ago that something like Twitch would be a success, like a wild success, I would have laughed in their face. I honestly think it's some sort of generational thing where, you know, when I grew up playing video games, it was definitely like you played or you just sat and watched. And if you sat and watched, you hated it. And now I think that kids really use, and I don't say kids as in, you know, children, but kids as in younger folk. I think that when they,
you're such an old man.
Yeah, I feel like it. With Twitch, it is amazing that there's such a following. And I think that it is a great way to see something, especially like a game like Minecraft or some of these games that really aren't games. I think people really enjoy kind of seeing and learning new ways to do stuff, or like, you know, it's almost like the sense of community that Chris, you and I didn't have as growing up. I mean, it was one of those things where games were very much a, a solo experience. And I think that this whole...
Yeah, I mean, if I wanted to see someone play a game, it would mean I'm going over to my friend's house and just watching them play or something like that.
Right. So,
which wasn't always the funnest thing to do.
So I feel like this is a great evolution towards gaming just becoming more mainstream and more people just accepting that you're not a gamer, you just like games like you like television or movies.
I will say there are times when spectating is great. Seeing amazing speedruns or high-level competition is always impressive, and if you maybe can't afford a new game, you can always use spectating as a way to inform your buying decisions. But given the choice, I'd always rather be playing than watching. Anyway, the next letter comes from listener Tyler F. He says, I was listening to your list of most wanted games when you started talking about F-Zero GX for GameCube. I still own this game, but sadly I don't think Nintendo has any incentive to bring F-Zero to Switch due to Fast RMX basically filling that same niche. Not only that, but Fast RMX is getting an update in September that adds 6 new tracks and 2 new cups. Why would Nintendo dedicate resources to creating a $60 game that would compete with a $20 game in the same genre on its console? It just wouldn't make sense. Additionally, did either of you try to secure a pre-order of the Super NES Classic? I sure did. I set alarms in various websites and apps. Sadly, I was sleeping when the Amazon pre-orders went up and missed them completely.
Oh, man.
I spent the majority of that day attempting to get a pre-order from Walmart, Target, or GameStop, only to have websites fail with 503 error or the item ripped from my cart. I was never able to get an NES Classic at MSRP, despite being a lifelong Nintendo fan, and I'm starting to get really bitter about things. If only Nintendo would release these game compilations on the Switch as a retail cart or digital download, what do you think? So to answer the first part of this question about Fast RMX, you know, I haven't played a lot of that game, but I have played the Fast series, and that developer does some really amazing stuff. But, you know, Nintendo is its own thing. Their games have a special touch that, you know, it's really hard for anyone else to compete with. And even if Fast RMX is a really great game, you know, they do not have a main character in Smash Brothers. It probably does not have quite the global recognition that F-Zero does, even if F-Zero has been off the table for a while. So I definitely think there is room for two series like that. I don't think that's really too much of a concern about Nintendo. I mean, some people probably would have said at one time, oh, Nintendo, they should never do fighting games. There's so many other companies doing fighting games, but we got Smash, and it turned out pretty great. You know, at one point, Nintendo wasn't really known for RPGs, but, you know, we got some very Nintendo-specific RPGs like Mario and Luigi and Paper Mario, and they were great. So just because there are other games doing the same type of thing, I think, should not rule out them doing their own take on futuristic racing. I think the biggest competition, as we've talked about before, is, of course, Mario Kart. Pete, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you, Chris. I think that, you know, there's plenty of room. There's a million kart racers out there, even if a kart racer came out for Switch. Mario Kart's a whole nother thing. And I think that per our conversation kind of earlier about F-Zero and the track editor, I think having some sort of element like that, if Nintendo were to use some sort of feature that no one's expecting, which they usually do, they like to bust out some feature that no one has any idea about.
This is true.
I think that could be another compelling reason to pick up the F-Zero over something else, some other rival in that same category.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. As for the Super NES Classic Edition, yeah, that sucks that you missed out on the pre-orders. If you've been following Power Pros podcast on Twitter, I did manage to get that up there, and I know a lot of our listeners were able to secure pre-orders, but I know I can't do that every time, so I have to say I actually pretty much just lucked out in that case. But as for your suggestion about, you know, putting these games on Switch or in some other fashion, yes, absolutely. It's absolutely ridiculous that Nintendo has stopped doing Virtual Console at present on Switch, and they're only making these old games available as standalone systems, and they're making them somewhat hard to get a hold of. So, yeah, hopefully they will come up with some solution that, you know, makes people happy instead of frustrated. Again, it's too early to really say. Maybe there will be enough out there, but, I feel your pain.
Yeah, you have to wonder what's coming down the pipeline, especially with this whole paid online service. So
We know there are going to be some sort of classic games with online enhancements.
Yep.
But we don't know if it's going to be a full Virtual Console style service. Hopefully it is.
Yep.
It's weird they would do it for two generations and then just totally just throw it out. But, you know,
makes me
remains to be seen.
Makes me think something big is coming, Chris.
I hope so. I hope so.
Megaton.
Okay, one last letter comes from listener Joey T. He says, my oldest holy grail, which probably only got as far as a crappy CG trailer, is Donkey Kong Racing for GameCube. I loved the first game, Diddy Kong Racing. Also, I really enjoyed the Golden Sun series, and I'm in need of an epic JRPG for Switch. I'm pretty excited for Project Octopath Traveler from the Bravely Default team, or even something on Virtual Console. So, Pete, you were actually at Nintendo when Donkey Kong Racing was announced for GameCube. Being there, on the inside, did you actually ever get a look at this game or learn anything about it beyond that initial trailer or anything?
No, I never did, Chris. I did actually, funny enough, I watched a trailer for what it was supposed to be in like the early phases of it, and it looked pretty random. it was super half-baked. It wasn't fully complete, and obviously it never hit the store shelves, but it never even made it into product testing as far as I'm aware. I think that it would have been an interesting game to see come out. I don't think anyone's ever tried that, where it's, you know, a racing game without carts or planes or boats, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, there was Kirby's Air Ride. But I think Donkey Kong Racing was so early in production that, we're never going to have an opportunity to actually play that like we are with Star Fox 2 or anything like that.
Right.
As for Golden Sun, I certainly would not be against that making a comeback. We did get that game on DS not too long ago, so I'm not quite as desperate for a new one of those as I was for a new Advance Wars or F-Zero. But there's definitely room for new Golden Sun. However, if you are in the market for an epic JRPG on Switch, we do have Xenoblade Chronicles 2 coming out. So hopefully that will scratch that itch.
Now, Chris, have you heard anything about this rumor of Final Fantasy 15 potentially being released on Switch or something in that universe?
Well, I've definitely heard the hints that the guys over at Square Enix are dropping, and if that actually happens, that would be fantastic. It's been a long time since we got a mainline Final Fantasy game on Nintendo systems, so I would absolutely welcome that.
Certainly has.
All right, that takes care of our letters, and I guess that means we should take an intermission, and then when we come back, we'll discuss this week's big topic, which is 25 years of Street Fighter on Nintendo systems. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is the 25th anniversary of Street Fighter II on the Super NES, or on Nintendo systems in general, I would say.
Yeah, true.
It's actually the Street Fighter franchise's 30th anniversary overall, but no one really remembers that first Street Fighter game that came out in the arcades. Yeah. It was kind of terrible, so what matters to me is that it is the 25th anniversary of this franchise coming to console and coming to the Super Nintendo.
Yep.
It was a pretty amazing thing because before that, before Street Fighter II, fighting games, they were not a very exciting place to be. I mean, what did we have before we had Street Fighter II? On Nintendo systems, you had like Urban Champion.
Right.
Two guys fight in the street. The loser falls to manhole. The winner does a funny dance. That's what we had for fighting games back then. And you had two or three moves. You had high punch and low punch and block, and that was it.
It's true. A whole genre was born from this title.
I mean, they existed before Street Fighter II, but they really weren't a big deal. They were not a phenomenon.
Right.
And I suppose it's even accurate to say that Street Fighter was on Nintendo systems before Street Fighter II, because in 1990, we got the release of the NES game Street Fighter 2010, The Final Fight. Do you remember that one, Pete?
I really don't. Refresh my memory.
You know, even though it had both the words Street Fighter and Final Fight in the name, it was nothing like either of them. It was a futuristic action platformer, and in the Japanese version, your character was named Kevin, but in the US version, they changed it to Ken. And so they're like, oh yeah, Ken, after he retired from being a Street Fighter, he became a scientist. And then he went through all sorts of exciting intergalactic adventures in the year 2010, which of course is hilarious on its own. Led to a whole thing in Nintendo Power back when we did our year in preview in 2010, talking about Ken in 2010 and showing all the exciting things that would happen throughout the year as he would encounter, you know, like all sorts of disgusting monsters and be able to go onto galactic teleportation and stuff like that. The game was pretty terrible, as I recall, but it might just have been that I wasn't very good at it, because it was a really, really hard game. But yeah, prior to 1992, that was all that Nintendo fans had as far as Street Fighter goes, this bizarre Ken the Cyborg versus mutants, and meanwhile we're playing Urban Champion to get our versus gaming fix. So, you know, Street Fighter II hit the arcades in 1991, and it became an instant phenomenon, and then the Super NES hit North America shortly after that, and then the following summer, in July, pretty close to my birthday, as I recall, yep, Street Fighter II came out, and it just absolutely blew players away.
Yep.
So, Pete, I was wondering what it was like for you, that first experience playing Street Fighter II, whether it's in the arcades or on the home system, just what was it like for you?
So it's funny because I think the other thing to remember about Street Fighter is that when it came out for Super Nintendo, that was, in my mind, probably the closest game from being an arcade game on your home console.
This is very true. I mean, there were some pretty good ones, but yeah, this was an amazing, amazing port.
Well, I think the big thing was that Street Fighter, it felt like you like spent a lot of quarters. So to be able to play it at home, quarter free, was and like not have to wait for your turn, was pretty awesome.
That was amazing. I mean, that was the other thing, is that this was just so impressive, both on a technical level and just on the level of, you know, how much of a fun game, how enjoyable it was.
Yeah, and you look at the first one now, of course I'm talking about the original Street Fighter 2 on Super Nintendo. That one is pretty bare bones by today's standards, if you look at it compared against everything. But it still was amazing. I still remember playing hours and hours and hours and hours of just, you know, competitive street fighting.
Yeah, I mean, it had everything that the original arcade game had. And, you know, by original, I don't mean Street Fighter. I mean Street Fighter 2, the World Warrior.
Right.
And, you know, I tried playing it in the arcade, and, you know, I saw it, and there were always these massive crowds in my town, but there was just a huge barrier to entry. Like, you know, it was a really competitive scene. The difficulty was cranked up really high. You know, I finally got a chance to play. I think I picked Dhalsim as the character for the first time because he had the long arms. Well, how can I lose if I have long arms? I can hit everybody before they can hit me.
Cheating.
And I totally got my butt kicked, and he was a really hard character to use. But because a lot of other players had, you know, were already into it and knew what they were doing, I just, you know, got my butt kicked, absolutely. And, you know, even if I could practice, I had a hard time pulling off the special moves with the joystick and stuff.
Yep.
But I really liked what I saw. It looked really fun. These characters looked really cool. I mean, that's the great thing about Street Fighter, is how unique and distinctive and dynamic all these different characters are. I mean, I've heard the Capcom designers talk about this, how, you know, each character has a really distinctive, defined silhouette. So, you know, even if you just see the shadows, you know who Guile is, you know who Zangief is.
Absolutely.
You know who E-Honda and Chun-Li and Blanka are. And they just managed to create these really, really compelling characters.
Yep.
And, you know, they kept it, you know, very accessible. Each character only had like two or three moves. So, you know, these days, you know, it's expected that you're going to have a roster of like, you know, 30 characters, and each one's going to have like, you know, two dozen moves.
Right.
But, you know, Street Fighter 2 only had 8 characters and like two or three moves each. And so it was really easy to at least learn the basics.
Well,
you know, it's one of those easy to learn, hard to master games, but it was fairly accessible as that kind of thing goes.
And those moves were all fairly similar. Like most of them were just, you know, same character used the same moves. You hold forward for 2 seconds and then release.
Oh, come on. I know you remember that it's back for 2 seconds, then forwarding the attack button.
I didn't mean to say that.
It was mostly, you know, either the charge moves or the quarter circle moves or maybe a half circle. So, yeah, once you figured it out, it wasn't too bad. Unlike, you know, the original Street Fighter, where even if you knew the moves, they were almost impossible to pull off.
Right. And I feel like that about most fighting games now, where it's like, if I haven't read the manual or the online manual, I'm not going to be able to even pull off any move.
Yeah, it can be pretty challenging. Although, you know, these days you can just try doing, well, I'll just try a quarter circle. Hey, guess what? That probably is going to do something.
But they owe that to Street Fighter.
Yes. Yes, they do. And so, that was the thing, is that it was hard for me to, you know, get a good grasp of it in the arcade. I just dabbled in it. You know, sometimes I would show up early in the day when there was very few people around, and I'd try my hand at it. But once the Super Nintendo game came out, that's when I'm like, okay, now I'm in my element. Now I can sit down and master this without, you know, getting my butt kicked and putting in quarter after quarter after quarter after quarter.
Right.
And, you know, getting to actually learn all this stuff. And it was super, super fun.
Yeah. The thing that captured my attention about Street Fighter, when you think about it, it's almost like this high-speed game of chess. It's like,
sure,
each character, you know, has these set of moves, set of rules, and then you're really trying to just kind of lure the other player into coming towards you so you can figure out the best counter and then the best way to retaliate. Mm-hmm. And it all happens within like the blink of an eye. And I read somewhere, somebody said that Street Fighter II might be one of the most like perfect video games there are. And I have to kind of agree with that. It just has this like clear set of rules. This is what you have to do. This is your time limit. And then the rules of engagement are very, you know, they're very well defined. And then you just have to be as good as you possibly can to beat the person who's on the other side of the stage from you.
Yep, that's all very true. I mean, those are basic fighting game rules, but you know, Street Fighter II is kind of the one that cemented them and said, yeah, this is how it's going to be. It established, you know, the entire genre, really.
It did, and it did it in a way that it's almost like unbelievable to think that somebody did it before there was a roadmap for how to do it.
Yeah, I suppose so. So when you first started playing, was there a particular character you gravitated towards? What were those early experiences like for you?
Yeah, for me, I don't know why, but I gravitated immediately towards Ken.
Okay.
Well, are we going to fight over whether it's Ryu versus Ryu?
I pronounce it Ryu myself.
Yeah. Well, anyways, everyone seemed to gravitate towards Ryu. And for some reason, I gravitated towards Ken. And I don't know if it's because he was a surfer bro or or what the deal was, but I just...
He dyes his hair, you know.
I always thought his moves were kind of cooler, even though they're almost identical.
In the original game, yes, they were. They were identical.
Maybe I just liked his red gi. I don't know what it was. Hmm. Yeah. But, you know, and then some of the other characters just seemed a little bit harder to pull off. I think E. Honda was a favorite of mine. And Chun-Li, of course. She was awesome with her, like, barrage of kicks. And
yeah,
her,
the lightning leg.
Yeah, exactly. And the upside down... spinning car kick or whatever she said.
Spinning bird kick, man. Jeez.
But it sounds like spinning car kick.
Don't know what you're talking about.
All right, let's forget that.
For me, the first character I decided I wanted to really try to learn was E. Honda.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why, just because he looked kind of difficult to use. So I thought, well, if I can, you know, learn to play as E. Honda, I can learn to play as anybody. So that was the first one I went after. And after that, I went on to Zangief, and I learned... He was the hardest one for me.
That's it.
After doing E. Honda, I was totally wrong. Zangief was still really tough to use, at least against the computer. You know, when I ended up fighting some of the boss characters, like Vega, he just, you know, was taking me out over and over and over again on the medium and higher difficulty settings. That was tough.
Do you remember the time you pulled off your first spinning pile driver?
Not really. No, not specifically.
I mean, could you do it on command, do you feel like?
Even now, I can't do it on command. I just kind of spin around the control pad and hope for the best. Because, I mean, That's something I still don't quite understand, because it's like, you should be jumping in the air if you are making a 360-degree motion.
Right.
So how does this work exactly? Right. So usually I do a jump in if I'm going to be trying to pull off the spinning pile driver. I don't know if that's the best thing to do or not.
I feel like I can still count the number of...
Yeah, that's kind of my secret shame.
Yeah, I feel like that's still like kind of the number of spinning pile drivers I've seen in my life is probably like less than 20.
I can manage it pretty well. I was playing Ultra Street Fighter 2, I could do it, but a lot of times I just end up jumping instead because it requires some precision button pressing there.
I chalked that one up with Dalsim's Teleport. Now I'm getting off topic, but do you remember the controller that was programmable so you could pull off moves, which is like a push of a button?
Oh yeah, definitely. Some of my friends had those. And that was an easy way to do that spinning pile driver for sure.
Yeah, I mean easy, but still not easy.
Well, yeah, it meant using a big extra clunky controller. But, for my friends who were not quite as skilled at playing Street Fighter 2, it was very handy for them.
Yeah, it worked for Mortal Kombat fatalities too, but that's another story.
The other thing that was really impressive about that game, aside from, obviously the characters, the play mechanics, and the overall visual appeal, I guess two things. One was I loved those warping floors, the way that as you moved along, the pattern on the floor actually shifted. And like by today's standards, it's like, well, that's absolutely nothing. Of course, that's what it does. That's what textures do when you move through a 3D environment.
Right.
But in 16-bit on a home system, that was just amazing. I mean, it looked really cool in the arcade, but the fact that they had that in the home version, along with almost everything else. I mean, they had to cut out a few minor moves, but all the special moves were in there. The warping floors were in there. They had to cut a couple elephants out of Dalsim's background. So that was kind of a big deal. Oh my gosh, they cut the elephants. They couldn't have six elephants. They could only do four.
How dare they?
Because the Super NES isn't powerful enough.
Right.
But I love those warping floors, man.
Yeah.
But the soundtrack, the soundtrack is absolutely awesome.
Yeah, the soundtrack's the best.
Every single tune in that game is amazing, and it absolutely fits the characters.
Yep.
I don't think there's any other fighting game in existence that has music that is that much of a perfect match for the characters like that.
Totally. And you know what is funny? The levels themselves, like speaking of that, before I had the internet and before I was a learned young man, being able to like kind of see these different locations, I know it sounds really funny, but like, but just like... seeing Brazil or seeing
Brazil.
Russia or seeing
USSR.
Yeah. And like all of seeing those levels. I mean, they're all ridiculous and totally stereotypical, but there was something about it that just like as a kid,
Japan
totally captured your attention. Are you going to stop that?
Yes, I'm done.
But
England,
but you know what I mean? There was just this like kind of element of like, you felt like you were traveling without even leaving your
USA. I'm really done now. Sorry.
Right. But even like Guile's level where they're on like a, top, Top Gun set.
Yeah. He was the All-American, but he ended up becoming, I think, sort of, I mean, I didn't really ever main any character because, after I was done with Honda, I moved on to Zangief and moved on to other characters. If I were to say I had a main, that would probably be Guile in the original Street Fighter 2. He was a great character. Only had two moves, never evolved too much. But, he had awesome hair and that cool air breaker throw.
Yeah.
And the flash kick was pretty gnarly.
Yeah, that flash kick is the worst. And I hated playing Guile because of it. I hated it. I could never... Basically, if you just see Guile crouching, you have two options.
Yeah.
You either jump at him high or you, sneak up. But either one, he can do, a sweet little roundhouse sweep or the flash kick. And you really... I mean, there's ways around it, but I hate that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're him, you're kind of turtling. You're going to sit there and do a lot of blocking.
You let them come
and,
to you.
You got
to
take it. Yeah. It's hard to go on offense with Guile somewhat, but, as a defensive character, he's really great. And, he probably inched out the other characters by just a hair for being my so-called main in the original. But then after that, we had that original amazing game. And, it's noteworthy because that kind of not only introduced, home systems to the fighting game phenomenon, but it helped turn the tide in the war against the Genesis. So that's like an amazing piece of history there that, the Genesis had a very big foothold, especially in North America. And then by having Street Fighter II as an exclusive on the Super Nintendo for a full year, that really helped Nintendo, you know, regain its lost ground in the 16-bit wars.
Yeah, it definitely did.
But then, after that, the next year, we got Street Fighter II Turbo, and then the year after that, we got Super Street Fighter II. So, of those, which one do you like the best? Of those three, the World Warrior, Turbo, or Super?
So I think I went on record a couple weeks ago saying Super was my favorite.
Okay.
But when I really stopped and thought about it, I got to say that I think Turbo was my favorite. And honestly, part of it
was... That's a lot of people's favorite. I don't blame you.
Well, part of it was that those four extra characters didn't do a ton for me. Mm-hmm. Never really became good with any, with, you know, DJ, Cammy...
T-Hawk or Fei Long.
Exactly. thanks for the assist. But being able to play the bosses that you could only play when you got far enough in the game, and you could only play them when the computer was controlling them, to be able to play, you know, Balrog and Vega and Sagat and M. Bison, those was awesome.
Yeah, that was one of the big main features of Street Fighter 2 Turbo, was being able to play as those guys. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and I felt like, you know, all of them were actually pretty cool additions to the game.
Mm-hmm.
I still never really got good with many besides, I think, do you pronounce it Sagat or Sagat?
Sagat, it's definitely Sagat.
Oh, right, well, Sagat, I thought...
He's not the dude from Full House, you know.
It's not Bob Sagat?
That's not right either.
but also, you know, Balrog, for as limited as he was, I thought he also had a really cool fighting technique.
Yeah, he definitely packed a punch.
Oh, boy.
But he was unique that he couldn't kick or anything. That was a cool thing about him.
Yeah, and he really had a hard time jumping to avoid anything, but...
yeah.
You know.
But still, it was definitely cool to have all those guys in there.
What about you? What...
Me? Yeah. Of those games, my favorite would have to be Super Street Fighter 2.
Mm.
I really like the bosses that arrived in Turbo. I liked the additional moves that were in Turbo, but I liked having even more stuff in Super Street Fighter 2.
Mm.
And I was a really big fan of Cammy. I really enjoyed her fighting style. I loved her Frankensteiner leg throw. Maybe she was even, you know, stronger than she should have been. I don't know. My friends did not like it when I picked Cammy because... I was very good at kicking their butts with this rather petite warrior woman.
I think you were a fan of her sprite model as well, but...
I'm putting the fifth on this one. But she was a fun character, and I mean, I just like having, you know, the more stuff, the better, kind of. So, you know, Super Street Fighter 2 increased the character roster up to 16 playables, so yeah, I'm going to say that that is my favorite one.
All right, fair. It makes sense that we disagree.
When it comes to those bosses, though, I really loved Vega. Vega was always one of my favorite characters. I really wanted to be able to play him in the World Warrior. So then when he became a playable character in Turbo, I'm like, okay, this is great. I never became that great at playing as Vega, but I always really liked him and thought he was a really interesting, unique character out there in the fighting game universe.
Yeah, I gotta say, Vega is probably one of the coolest. Especially with the ability to break his claw halfway through the match.
Yeah, that was pretty neat. And he's got a purple outfit on too, which is also pretty cool.
Oh, plus he broke the fourth wall. He climbed around on the fence in the back.
Yeah, he climbed on the fourth wall, yeah.
He really did.
Yeah, that was pretty nifty. So, of course, you know, all those games were good and fun, but we did continue to get a few other Street Fighter games after that. You know, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo came to Game Boy Advance, Street Fighter Alpha 2 came to Super Nintendo,
mm-hmm.
and then Street Fighter Alpha 3 also ended up on Game Boy Advance. Did any of those ever do anything for you? Were you into any of them, or had you kind of left Street Fighter behind by that point?
Well, when the Game Boy Advance version of Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo,
mm-hmm.
when that came out, I definitely picked that up. That was awesome, especially if you got your link cable action on, being able to play somebody two player.
Yeah, I'm not sure I ever did. I think I might have only played it single player on my GBA.
Yeah, I definitely spent a significant amount of time playing it single player as well. But yeah, it was a sweet, you know, almost Super Nintendo quality, if not maybe a little bit better on the Game Boy. The only downfall,
yeah, it was pretty impressive.
The only downfall was of course the limited number of buttons. I remember.
Yeah,
having friends be pretty perturbed by that, and of course, as a Nintendo apologist, I saw no problem. They actually did do a pretty good remedy. I think it was you tap or hold for different strengths, and then if you did that on the shoulders, I thought that you could kind of get away with, you know, that for the most part. But Yeah, I like that version a lot. As for the other ones, I didn't really play any of the others. I think I do own Alpha 3 on Game Boy, but they kind of lost me with the Alpha series, to be honest.
That's funny, because for me, as much as I like Street Fighter 2, I would have to say I like the Alpha series even better.
Wow, really?
And I would say that Street Fighter Alpha 2 is probably my all-time favorite fighting game. So it was pretty cool to see that released on the Super NES. Unfortunately, that version, you know, they had to kind of, cut a lot of corners to make it work as a Super NES cart.
Right.
You know, this came out like in 96. The world had moved on to other systems.
PlayStation, right? Yeah.
Yeah, there was PlayStation, Saturn out. The Saturn had the best home version of Street Fighter Alpha 2, but they still managed to put it on the Super Nintendo, and just that alone was a very impressive feat. But, you know, they had to, you know, cut out a lot of moves, and it actually had like access time because it had to compress so much data to be able to cram it onto the cartridge. It had these weird and awkward pauses that made it less than ideal. I mean, if that was the only home version out there, I would be all over it and be like, you know what? It sure beats not being able to play this game at all. And, just looking at it from a technical standpoint, it is kind of a miracle that they could do it on a 16-bit system.
Totally.
But compared to the other versions, it's like, clearly this isn't as good. But still, it's an amazing fighting game. I love the cast of characters. As a big Final Fight fan, it was great to see a lot of the Final Fight characters returning. Guy and Saddam and Rolento being in there was all a whole lot of fun for me.
Cool.
However, after that, there wasn't that much Street Fighter on Nintendo anymore.
No.
Along with all the other third-party stuff. You know, third parties started drifting away as we went into the N64 era, and so Street Fighter 3 like completely passed by Nintendo systems. And even though they were tied together so closely back with the Super NES and its launch on that 25 years ago, people certainly didn't think of Nintendo as being a place for Street Fighter games. So then, after it finally made its return with the Super Street Fighter 4 3D Edition, you know, it was like, all right, we're finally getting back to Street Fighter. It was cool to see them, you know, make a proud return on that system.
Yep.
And then more recently, we got Ultra Street Fighter 2. Everything came full circle earlier this year to celebrate that 30th anniversary of the franchise and the 25th anniversary of the game coming to Nintendo systems.
Full circle like a Dalsim Yoga Flame?
Full circle like a spinning pile driver, my friend.
Right. That was a half circle, the Dalsim Flame, right?
Yes. Yes, that is correct.
Mm-hmm. That's why you're the sensei and I'm the Padawan?
Sure. Of course, we have talked about Ultra Street Fighter 2 on the show, but I'm not sure you were on that episode, were you?
No, I wasn't.
So what did you think of that one? Did you enjoy it? Were you into it? Did you pick it up?
So I played it at the Nintendo Switch event in New York.
Okay.
However, I have not purchased it yet. I just thought that the $40 asking price was like maybe $10 too steep.
Yeah, I think you're right. I also
would really like to just download it as opposed to buy the physical version. And mainly just because it's one of those games I would imagine myself, you know, picking up and playing every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
If I see it on sale, you can do that. I'm going to possibly just pick it up. I've waffled many times. And I'm sure at some point I will just go, you know what, I need this.
Well, I would definitely say it is very, very good. I mean, I hadn't played Street Fighter 2 in a long time when that game came out, so I wasn't really sure what to think. I mean, I played it at an event as well, and so I knew a little bit, but I was surprised at how much I still really, really love the game when I, you know, picked up Ultra Street Fighter 2 and put it into my Switch, and I was very happy to discover, wow, this is still really, really fun. It's still just as enjoyable as it was all these years ago. You know, now we have it with these beautiful HD graphics and this remixed music in addition to the original graphics and sound. So yeah, if you don't have that game, I certainly recommend picking it up and re-experiencing what that phenomenon is all about, because even after all this time, Street Fighter on Nintendo systems is still pretty darn impressive, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's cool. I remember the Super Street Fighter 4 for 3DS being sort of like a launch title.
Yes, yes it was.
And that really...
Probably the best launch title, to be honest.
You know, and that was actually the first version of Street Fighter 4 that I'd played in any real capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to play that, I feel like that was a great launch title. Also, it used the Street Pass functionality pretty cool. With that little,
no, that's right. I kind of forgot about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, with that little sort of like amiibo battle.
Yeah, they weren't amiibo, but yeah, they're little figurines.
Yeah, I mean, they might as well for all intents and purposes. Too bad they don't exist. You'd have to own them.
Well, maybe I'm lucky that they don't exist in that case.
But that version was actually pretty...
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Pretty great, yeah.
I was probably the main person who pushed for that to be a cover story at Nintendo Power because, you know, the first party games, you know, we had Pilot Wings, we had Steel Diver, we had Nintendogs and Cats. And I certainly thought, well, you know, out of all this stuff, the game that is most exciting here at the 3DS launch is Street Fighter 4 3D Edition. And so, you know, after all that time of being without Street Fighter games on Nintendo systems, I was very proud to be like, okay, this is like going back to Nintendo's heritage. There hasn't been a Street Fighter game on the cover of NP in years and years, but now it's finally happening again. So I was kind of proud to be part of that.
Yeah. Now, do you have a strong feeling about a 3D versus two-dimensional Street Fighter?
Well, I mean, not really, because as far as the games are concerned, they have pretty much retained the same gameplay style, whether they've been polygonal or they've been 2D. It's all very good. Street Fighter 4 is great. You know, Street Fighter 2 in all its incarnations is great. I guess if I had to pick one over the other, I'd probably say, you know, pure sprite-based 2D. But since the gameplay has stayed very consistent throughout the series' life, it really doesn't matter. What about you?
I gotta say, I'm a 2D man, and mainly because it's just prettier. I'm a huge fan of pixel art in general. So mm-hmm. being able to kind of you know, just see the character in their full glory.
I think what you're trying to say is that every frame of animation is pretty darn glorious, especially in this new HD version. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I totally see where you're coming from.
Yep. Well, hey, Chris, before we wrap this up, is there anything else that you think, you know, if future Street Fighter titles potentially, anything you'd like to say about that?
Interesting question. I suppose that if you're going to get more Street Fighter on the Switch, I would love to see Capcom revisit those Alpha games I was talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It is a really, really excellent series. I think it's almost inconceivable to think that they would dare do a Street Fighter Alpha 4, but I would love for that to happen. But I would just be happy with them, you know, giving some honest-to-goodness, you know, arcade quality ports of Street Fighter Alpha, Street Fighter Alpha 2, and Street Fighter Alpha 3. You know, you can't really play those games on, you know, current systems. So I think it would be fantastic to see them, you know, dip into their back catalog, bring those back on Switch, and give players the opportunity to re-experience what those are all about in their, you know, pure arcade form.
Cool. Well, I would actually love to see a Capcom versus Nintendo. And I know it's been talked about and rumored forever, but...
Yeah.
You know, just the idea of that would be pretty amazing. You can just imagine somebody like, you know, you summon Captain Falcon and then, you know, in swings Kid Icarus or something. And meanwhile, you're fighting Dalzim and he pulls in Cammy or something.
Yeah, well, I certainly would not complain about that. Obviously, we had Ryu appearing in Smash Brothers and that's the closest we've got for now. But yeah, if that ever happened, I would probably pass out because that would be pretty darn awesome.
Or even, you know, Beautiful Joe would be in there, of course.
Yeah, let's take them all. If they had a Nintendo versus Capcom, that would be pretty awesome. I remember when the producer dropped by the Nintendo Power offices, and I think we asked him that question. He's like, oh, would you like to see that? So, you know, I think it's probably something that the Capcom would love to see happen, and I know a lot of fans would as well.
Cool.
And with that, I think that brings this week's big topic to a close. Before we wrap up the episode, though, we do have one more thing.
Oh, man.
And it is, of course, a dramatic reading. This time, continuing Captain Nintendo from the pages of Nintendo Power magazine. Last time, Nintendo employee Brett Randles paused his Metroid game and was blasted into unconsciousness by an exploding box of microchips while trying to protect his co-workers, Tara Bates and Max Powers. When he woke up, his skin felt metallic and he sensed he had some sort of special abilities. And now, the saga continues. Brett, is this supposed to be like this? Max inquired, staring at the screen. Blast my asteroids, exclaimed Brett. No, that shouldn't be like that at all. What in the world? That's impossible, cried Terra, moving closer to the screen. All three were now transfixed by the monitor, and all three knew something was definitely wrong. On the screen was the scene from Metroid, where Samus was standing on a platform, ready to fire missiles at the sinister Mother Brain. What was definitely wrong was that the Mother Brain was nowhere to be found. It's gone, said Brett. The brain is gone. What the heck is going on here? Where's my NES Advantage? Darn, I wish it was lighter in here. Suddenly, the room became brighter, bright enough for above-average visibility, though it was impossible for anyone to determine the source. This is real bizarre, said Max. Where did this light come from? I think I did it somehow, said Brett. Hey, look at the table. What was all this stuff? Asked Max, picking up a smoldering cartridge. Fortunately, it was mostly just blank game packs that hadn't been programmed yet, said Terra. Look at this one, Brett said. Look at all the chips that are melted into it. And check out how green and shiny the metal is. Let's play it, said Max.
Don't do it.
And that's where we're stopping for today. We will have to wait until next time to see what happens when they try to play this smoldering or possibly enhanced Nintendo cartridge that hasn't been programmed yet, because that's how that worked, right?
Right.
We often had just blank, non-programmed games just sitting around the NP offices, right?
Right. I mean, pretty much just piles of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's a lie. We are totally just joking. Making this up. It's not a thing. It doesn't happen.
I mean, no.
It's ridiculous. It makes no sense at all.
It doesn't make any sense. But none of that story so far makes any sense.
Well, just wait. Maybe it'll all come together and it'll be amazing by the time everything is said and done.
One can hope.
Anyway, that's it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Pete at Burly Red Yeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would be great if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Now, thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud,
Hiker Uppercut,
and our grumpy friend Falco,
piece of cake,
we will see you next time.